On today's episode of Locked Up with History, we will be stepping back to 1853 and what should have been the first execution in Geelong. Instead, it finished with a very lucky escape. Stay tuned.
Warning. This podcast contains discussions of some potentially distressing topics. Listeners, please be advised. Come with us for true and tall tales unsurpassed, with stories from Victoria's dark colonial past. Spirits, executions, ghosts, murders and ghouls. These are the stories they don't teach you at school. All these twisted tales of mystique and mystery coming to you now on Locked Up With History.
Hello everybody and welcome back to Locked Up With History episode 4. My name is Deb Robinson and on today's episode we are going to be talking about what should have been not only the first execution but the first public execution in Geelong and a man who escaped death at the end of the noose by the very skin of his teeth. Now John Goldman was born in 1830 in Prussia, the son of a sergeant major in the Prussian army. He reportedly served in the Mexican War of 1846-47 and was a well-educated man. He arrived in Victoria aboard the Coromandel in January 1850 and not very much is known about his very early time in Victoria. But by 1852, Goldman was a trooper and part of the Gold Escort Police working out of Buninyong. However, it was not all smooth sailing in the police force for him. Goldman appears to have a bit of a temper, something that continued to rear its head throughout his life. In January 1852, whilst working as a trooper, Goldman was accused of pointing a pistol at a woman in Ballarat, causing her to miscarry her pregnancy through fright. Her husband lodged a formal complaint against him, but as he was employed as a gold trooper, there was nothing the police magistrate or the commissioner could do except remove his weapons from him. However, they were returned a couple of weeks later as Goldman was working a night shift.
If you'd like to visit some of the places featured on Locked Up With History, book in a tour with Twisted History. For the full range of tours and to book, visit twistedhistory.net.au.
Now, on the 1st of February 1852, Goldman was on duty at Buninyong when he became involved in an altercation with a local shopkeeper named Edward Adams around 9:30 a.m. Adams had lent Goldman a couple of boxes 2 weeks earlier on which Goldman had built his bed in his tent. On this particular day, Adams had demanded that they be returned to him, but Goldman refused. Goldman believed he had purchased the boxes from Adams, and there was no love lost between the two men. Adams approached Goldman's superior, Corporal William Harvey, about Goldman's refusal to return the boxes, and they went to Goldman's tent to retrieve them. Despite his superior's orders to give up the boxes, Goldman still refused to return them. When Harvey bent down to retrieve them, Goldman drew his pistol and fired. Adams had yelled out a warning to Corporal Harvey when he saw Goldman's gun and then ran from the tent. As he reached the pole outside, he heard the gun fire. Adams ran to another tent to get help, and when the two men returned, Harvey was staggering out of Goldman's tent with a hand on both sides of his body. The bullet had entered just above his right hip and lacerated his bowel before exiting the other side. The entire event took less than 3 minutes. Harvey was moved to his tent and would die 24 hours later after giving his dying declaration. Goldman escaped into the bush, and a warrant was issued for the arrest of the escaped man by the Chepstow Bench. Constable Collins started in pursuit and managed to track him to Mount Cole, where an overseer of the Campbell and Clark homestead denied seeing him. A couple of weeks later, a disgruntled bullock driver would accuse the overseer, Ross, of harbouring the wanted trooper. When confronted with the evidence from those living in the hut once used by Goldman, Ross admitted he had sent him away once he knew he was the murderer. Goldman was next seen about 10 days after the murder, riding a grey mare in the Jim Crow Ranges heading towards Mount Alexander, or present-day Castlemaine. No charges were laid over the misinformation, which angered Constable Collins so much he resigned his position immediately. It would be 14 months before Goldwyn would be captured, despite a £30 reward being offered for his apprehension. In April 1853, Police Magistrate Peter Teague would recognise John Goldwyn working as a timber cutter in the Plenty Ranges. Teague had been quartered with Goldwyn in Ballarat before he was transferred to Mount Alexander, and so knew him quite well. When confronted, Goldwyn admitted he knew all about it and went quietly to Melbourne before being transferred to Geelong to stand trial for Corporal Harvey's murder.
For a fascinating look at life in a colonial prison, visit Geelong Jail Museum. Situated just over an hour from Melbourne in the heart of Geelong, it's Victoria's most intact and longest continually operating colonial prison. For information, search for Geelong Jail or call 1300 865 800.
The trial was held in the Geelong Circuit Court on July 27, 1853, before Justice Redmond Barry. Goldwyn pled not guilty to having willfully and feloniously murdered William Harvey at Ballarat. Evidence was provided by Edward Adams, Peter Teague and Alfred Eyre. The medical evidence was presented by Eyre as he had taken the dying man's deposition and the doctor who had attended Harvey was now deceased. After the evidence, the prosecution had been presented, Goldwyn's defence lawyer, Mr. Smythe, addressed the jury, contending firstly that there was nothing in evidence to warrant them supposing Harvey's death was anything more than an accident, and secondly, that the very most they could find the prisoner guilty of was manslaughter. Judge Barry clearly and minutely pointed out the different degrees of homicide to the jury. However, the jury took only 30 minutes to find Goldwyn guilty of willful murder. Goldwyn responded to the sentence, reiterating that it was an accident and that he had plenty of opportunities to shoot Harvey had he so wanted to. He believed the whole event was due to Adam's hatred and mistreatment of him. Goldwyn had suffered prejudice due to being German, relaying a story that Adams had served him a meal with his fingers onto a dirty plate. Justice Barry passed the sentence of death upon Goldwyn with a voice choked with emotion after Goldwyn's impassioned plea for mercy, and Goldwyn was removed to the Geelong jail to await the carrying out of his sentence. The execution was set down for the 15th of August, 1853 at 8 a.m. The first public execution was to be held at a place that would become known in later times as Gallows Flats, about 200 metres from the front gates of the Geelong jail. A plea for mercy was sent to the Executive Council, which was denied. Many residents of Geelong felt that the verdict was unfair and, given the circumstances, should not lead to the loss of another man's life. A petition was sent to Governor Charles Latrobe, to which he replied on the 8th of August that he could find no reason as to why the sentence of law should not take its course. By the 11th of August, the gallows were being constructed in readiness. The day before the execution, a schoolmaster named William Behan had appealed for a final chance for Goldwyn through the Reverend Andrew Love, due to his belief that the testimony of Edward Adams was not to be trusted. Reverend Love contacted Archdeacon Stretch, who wrote a personal letter to the Lieutenant Governor Latrobe, again requesting a reprieve for John Goldwyn. As the steamer did not run on a Sunday, a rider was secured from the local Cobham Co by the name of Richard Illidge. Another man had refused the ride after he had found out a man's life was dependent upon him. Illidge would set off for the 100-mile journey for Melbourne around 2 p.m. from Geelong. He was promised changes of horses at Little River and Werribee Inns for the return journey, however this never eventuated. The journey was not an easy one, with flooded rivers and dense bush to get through in places, but Illidge and his horse made it to the Governor's residence in Toorak late at night. With his message delivered, he could do no more until the Governor responded, so watered and rested his horse and himself while he waited. It was after midnight before Illidge received the Governor's reply and set off for the return journey in the darkness. Luckily, it was a moonlit night, which helped Illidge make good time and be able to ride fast in the darkness. He made it to Duck Ponds, today known as Lara, by daybreak, but feared he would be too late to save the condemned man.
You're listening to Locked Up with History.
At the Geelong Jail, a crowd had begun to gather from an early hour, keen to witness the first public execution in Geelong. Goldwyn spent the day in religious ministrations with the Reverend Lowe, preparing his soul for an abrupt transition into eternity. Goldman was resigned to his fate, expressing regret at the circumstances which led him down this path. A German Bible had been supplied by the local German community, and Goldman did not sleep at all the night before. He requested to be allowed to be executed in his trooper's trousers. After distributing a few books to fellow prisoners and a few words with the turnkeys, he donned a black silk neckerchief and a black coat in readiness for the 200-yard trek to the gallows. At 12 minutes to 8, an exhausted Illidge arrived with a reprieve from the Lieutenant Governor, handing it to Captain Fiennes, who immediately informed Reverend Love. When told of the reprieve, Goldman sank to his knees in gratitude and cried, saying, "God bless the Governor for saving my life." Lieutenant Mansell, who oversaw the execution guard, informed the crowd, who gave three cheers before dispersing from Gallows Flat, despite being denied the macabre public spectacle. It was rumoured that Foster Fiennes, who was a police magistrate at the time, put the hands of the clock back 10 minutes in the jail to allow extra time for the messenger to arrive from Melbourne with the reprieve. Richard Illidge, who had arrived in the nick of time to save Goldman from the gallows, was awarded 75 sovereigns and a written testimonial in gold for his trouble. Illidge was killed with another man in July 1876 whilst mining at the New Welcome Mine near Ballarat by a fall of earth. Goldman's sentence was commuted to 15 years hard labour on the roads, with the first three to be served in irons. Goldman would serve his time on the hulks of the Sacramento and the President, as well as the Melbourne and Pentridge jails. Now, whilst aboard the Sacramento in April 1855, Goldman attempted to escape. The convicts had been on shore for the day working and were mustering in preparation to make their way back to the hulk. Goldman was missed, and an extensive search was undertaken. The authorities were about to give up when a warder spotted something in the water. It was the head of Goldman. Warders were about to open fire on the man when he begged for mercy, as he was already close to drowning and being choked by the irons that were still manacled to the convict. He'd taken his chance to wade out in the water unseen. Whether to escape or to commit suicide, it's not clear. However, his efforts earned Goldman 2 years on the lower decks of another of the hulks, the President, reserved for the worst convicts. He was eventually awarded a ticket of leave for the Geelong District in January 1861. In December 1861, Goldman was issued with a conditional pardon on the proviso that he left the colony. He was taken aboard the Empress of the Seas, employed as a quartermaster for the journey to England, but he would never leave the colony. At 4:30 a.m. on the 10th of December 1861, Goldman had just finished the middle watch when the fire alarm was sounded. Goldman would testify that he saw a man in a red shirt with no shoes around 3 a.m, but thought nothing more of it. Goldman assisted others to escape the burning ship. He helped with drawing up water in an attempt to put out the fire, until the sound "to save yourselves" was given by Captain Bragg. Goldman was questioned by the Queenscliff police for an hour and a half after another crew member related that Goldman had a dream about the ship catching fire. This was despite some of the crew stating they would rather see the ship burn than return to England. At the inquiry, suspicion was pointed at Goldman, given his previous history, but he was cleared of any wrongdoing. Despite this, he ended up back in Pentridge with his pardon revoked, as he had not left the colony as he had been directed to by the authorities. Goldman was once again given a ticket of leave in January 1862, and a full pardon was finally issued in February 1865.
Interested in learning more about this episode? Join the Locked Up With History Facebook group for more facts and discussions about the dark colonial past of Victoria and beyond.
Now, Goldman settled in the St Kilda area working as a plasterer. He married Esther Palmer in 1864 under the name of John Lorinsky, a name he used for the rest of his life. After Esther died, he remarried in 1886 to Sarah Wayne, and there were no children born to either of the marriage. But Goldman's temper was nearly far from boiling point and would appear to be the reason for several court appearances across two states. In 1869, charges were brought against him by a woman by the name of Matilda Ann Metcalf for assault. Matilda stated that she'd visited Mrs. Wayne's shop to return some toys that she'd been entrusted to sell. While in the shop, Lorinsky entered and proceeded to strike her and kick her, knocking Matilda to the ground with no provocation. Lorinsky's defence was that Matilda had used very bad language. He was fined £3. In 1873, Lorinsky was charged for inflicting bodily harm on Patrick Campbell. Lorinsky visited Campbell for money that he was owed. Campbell denied he owed anything and followed Lorinsky out to shut the gate behind him when Lorinsky hit him over the head with a piece of quartering, rendering Campbell unconscious. In court, Lorinsky stated that he was just throwing the wood away and that it was an accident. He was found guilty and sentenced to 2 months' jail. By 1878, Lorinsky appeared in court again, this time in New South Wales for an attempted stabbing. He was accused of going to James Gardner's house in Sydney, where the two men argued over the ownership of some furniture. Lorinsky struck Gardner on the back of the head and broke the knife, but tried to stab him anyway. Gardner tried to protect himself, so Lorinsky used a whip to strike him. He was found not guilty. In 1887, he was back in Melbourne in the St Kilda area, where he was running a boarding house with his wife. A young lady was presented to them as Mrs Grattan, the wife of Adebayor Crooge, to board in two rooms at the Neptune Street property. However, they were not married. Her husband only visited a few times. Two other gentlemen called for the young lady one evening and said her name was Mary Ellis, not Mrs Grattan. It was then Lorinsky asked her to leave. Another boarder named John Crosby refused to continue to board at the house, and James Schultz refused to take lodgings while the young lady was there. Crooge would insist that Mary was a fabulous pianoforte player, and that was the only reason that he visited her. Lorinsky sued Crooge for the loss of earnings, but the case was dismissed. In 1901, Lorinsky brought charges against his solicitor, alleging negligence in the handling of legal proceedings against the Australian Mutual Providence Society. Negligence was denied, but the courts awarded him £18 anyway. Now, Goldman did make the papers one last time in 1902 after putting his boat in at Sorrento. He got into difficulty in rough seas near the St Kilda Pier. A man tried to help, but Goldman refused to leave his boat. Help was sought from the Williamstown police, who sent out the customs launch to help the old man back to shore. He was towed to the pier at St Kilda and given stimulants to revive him. John Goldman, or John Lorinsky, lived until 1913, where he died in St Kilda aged 83 years, 60 years after his scheduled execution and death. He was buried at the Springvale Cemetery with his second wife, Sarah, who died the following year.
You're listening to Locked Up With History.
Before we sign off on John Goldman's story, don't forget to join us over on Facebook with our Locked Up With History group. This is where you can ask me any questions on the current episodes and where I can pop up some photos to go with the podcast. Or you can check out our webpage at www.lockedupwithhistory.com.au, where again all the previous episodes are, or will be very soon, along with some photos for the episodes where we have them. On our next episode, we'll be returning to Gallows Flats and just 12 months after the Goldmans' near execution. However, John Gunn and George Roberts were not so lucky, with more than 2,000 people in attendance to witness their fate. Until then, see you on the darker side of history.
Information on the story from today's episode, check out the show notes or join the Locked Up With History Facebook group. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.